Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarr!
Today is July 9th, 2017, and this is GameBuoy Podcast, Episode 141, Import 101. Welcome once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
This week, we're going to be discussing a topic that was brought up by one of you, our lovely and beautiful listeners out there in Internet Radio Land. We were asked a little bit about how to get into import gaming, and I have to say, you know, it's never been a better time, and we're going to talk a little bit about why that is this episode. Until then, though, we've got this much to talk about and this much time in which to do it. So, Slaggy, do you want to get us started?
Yes. Speaking of imports, this is an interest that it was imported from Japan. Okay, that was bad, but Chroma Squad, your beloved Super Sentai simulation game, is getting a major update. Actually, it's already live on Steam, and it has a new game plus and a new game plus plus. It also adjusted difficulties and added a heroic difficulty.
Ooh.
As well as reflex-based minigames.
Oh, fun.
I'm sorry, I believe this update is live on all platforms, but you were able to play the old version on Steam's Legacy Branch, which is a cool thing that, I don't know if we spent a lot of time talking about the Legacy Branch when Steam implemented that. I mean, I guess I don't really remember when they did that. But anyway, Chroma Squad, updates.
Awesome. We also have word here that eBay has been taking steps to get the SNES Classic Edition scalping in line. You know, we've already seen where scalper listings in Europe, where the console is already available for pre-order, scalper listings have been popping up all over in Europe on eBay for the SNES Classic Edition pre-orders that people got. And eBay has actually changed the rules now for how pre-order listings will work on their service. Basically, all listings are going to be removed for any item more than 30 days away. So, you know, obviously this won't protect things within a month of the console's release, but up until that point, at least, there will be a little bit of a disincentive for scalpers that plan on going on eBay but can't really float that cost themselves to their pocketbook for the amount of time between when pre-orders go up and when they hit that 30-day mark. All in all, this should make things a little easier, but it unfortunately won't be, you know, the singular salve to fix the situation. What do you think, Slaggy?
I'm just like, when did eBay get so complicated? I remember back in, like, the late 90s when it's like, oh, I want, like, just this old vinyl that someone has up for auction. Cool, I've been on it, and I'm paying $6.75 plus shipping, but oh, I gotta go down to the post office and get a money order because they're only accepting money orders. Remember how everyone on eBay wanted you to pay with a money order? I guess it's safer that way, right? And there was no PayPal back then.
Yep.
Memories.
We also have word here, courtesy of Nintendo at Japan Expo last week, that ARMS will be getting its first post-launch character with Max Brass, that part we knew, but that character will be available as a playable fighter on July 12th, which obviously is just a few days away. In fact, y'all on the internet might be listening to this episode when this character is available.
Or just looking at his booty.
You would.
So a long-awaited character has finally arrived on Overwatch. This is Doomfist. And he is currently available on the PTR, the Public Test Realm. And so basically he is an offensive character, by which I mean offense, not like offensive. He has a hand cannon and a rocket punch and a meteor strike and a seismic slam. So I've seen a lot of people really excited about, you know, I mean, people get excited about new Overwatch characters a lot, but you know, Blizzard has been really good, I mean, from my perspective, with Overwatch, with including persons of color, of which Doomfist is one.
All of the add-on characters so far have been POC.
Oh, that's awesome. I didn't even stop to think about that. So, yeah, I see a lot of people already really excited to try out Doomfist, or, you know, they've already tried him out on the PTR. Always cool to see, you know, new characters added to Overwatch and how that kind of changes the metagame.
Oh, absolutely.
And now that I'm trying to actually learn how to play Overwatch, this might be a good time since everybody's probably trying to figure things out again.
Oh, hooray. Well, we are expecting Doomfist to hit the live realms on Tuesday. Typically on Overwatch, patches only sit on the PTR for about a week unless there's something really broken with them. So unless something pops up that it requires immediate attention, it's safe to expect Doomfist in the regular game, you know, in just by the time you're hearing this episode.
It's like they were like, we wanted to make him have a even hotter butt.
Yeah, they probably wouldn't hold him back for that.
We wanted to show off both nipples.
Well, we do also have a really interesting word here out of Sega. And this is specifically from Sonic Team's head, Takashi Iizuka-san, who spoke to Metro Online, which is, of course, you know, a pretty notable UK news source, about how, you know, they're really doing Sonic Mania in a way to sort of figure out where the fan base wants Sonic to go. And it's really interesting because they also talk a little bit about how, you know, Sonic Forces is really meant to be like the wider audience title. Sonic Mania is really meant to be like the fan title. And so, you know, they're really doing this two title strategy to market to both fans, which I thought was a really interesting take. What are your thoughts, Sagi? I know you have a lot of Sonic thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I just thought it was funny that Iizuka-san says in this interview, we don't know whether it'll be accepted positively in the market. I'm like, this is literally the game that people have been waiting 23 years? Is that 23 years? When was Sonic & Knuckles? Was that 94 or 95?
It
was 94,
not,
right?
When it comes to dates, that is not my thing.
Well, either way, like, almost 25 years people have been waiting for this game, basically. I mean, but I guess it's maybe also kind of a niche audience, maybe? I don't know. It's kind of funny. I mean, I guess that, you know, they've been, this is the whole journey with Sonic, you know, that I'm surprised that they're like, oh, we don't know if people will accept it positively.
Now, see, and that is where I completely disagree with you. I don't find that surprising at all. If anything, I think that the arc that we have seen Sonic Team take over the last 20 years now is that Sonic Team is completely out of touch with what people want in the gaming space.
Oh, so you're saying you're not surprised that Iizuka-san is like, oh, I don't know.
And you have to remember, they thought Shadow the Hedgehog was a good idea.
They thought Sonic 2006,
they thought Sonic
was, a
2006
good idea.
Was a good idea. They thought that Sonic making out with Lacey Chabert was something that people were going to lose their minds over in a good way.
Okay, hey, I'm really...
They thought that people were going to get into Sonic winning the heart of a human woman.
Okay, I'm really gay, but if you had the chance to make out with Lacey Chabert, you would do it, right?
Pass. But also not my point. So yeah, no, Sonic Team has no, like, I'm sorry, I'm not really trying to speak ill of anyone, but also, I mean, the Sonic Team, especially back in the Yuji Naka days, like, full on, like, they said some pretty arrogant, dumb stuff, particularly about other studios under Sega's purview. So they're arrogant people, and it doesn't surprise me that they have literally no idea what we want.
Yeah, well,
I
hopefully...
just hope they take the damn hint, like yeah, they say they're going yeah. to.
I hope so, too.
You, yeah, I did not intend to go in on Sonic Team there, but I could not help myself.
I'm a little mad that you just blew off Lacey Chabert. I mean, that's Gretchen Wieners there. Anyways, moving on from
you are
Sonic.
Too gay to function.
Yeah, hello. Well, speaking of too gay to function, I was going, yes, when you told me this news. And that is that Blaster Master Zero is adding some new characters. The first one has already been added. It's our girl Shantae. Hey, Shantae, she stays. And Shovel Knight will be coming on August 3rd.
Yeah, you know, Shantae is already in the game. She is a delight, super fun to play as. And, you know, again, Integrates is really killing it with this post-release Blaster Master Zero support. If you're not playing it yet, I have to ask, like, why? If you are playing it, definitely make sure that you download Shantae, because she cool.
So when you say Shantae's a delight, you mean she's being her usual self.
That is correct. We also have word here, of course, that Splatoon 2's first Splatfest is going to be taking place on July 15th. That might seem a little interesting to you, because Splatoon 2 doesn't come out until July 21st. What gives, right? But there's actually going to be a Splatoon demo put up on the eShop for the Switch so that you can download it and take part in this first Splatfest. The
Excellent.
Client is already available for download, so you can download it now and be ready for next Saturday.
Oh, that's exciting.
Indeed. In fact, the two factions are going to be cake and ice cream.
Oh,
I am
man.
Team ice cream myself.
Yeah, I mean, like sometimes, usually with these Splatfests, like I'm like, okay, there's clearly a right choice, but ooh, I mean, ice cream definitely, but you know, cake's a pretty good one too.
There is a right choice here, and it isn't cake.
Which one of? I guess we haven't talked about them yet, have we?
We haven't, but now would be the time. I'm not really interested in talking about, you know, the Splatoon Direct that took place. This, for me, was the only real notable news here. We did learn a lot about it, the game, as far as, like, the systems go, about the NPCs we'll be meeting. Pearl and Marina are probably the two biggest ones. Pearl, of course, is a rapper. Marina is a singer. It's a little bit interesting that, you know, we're really seeing Nintendo be the go-to for, like, notable idols in their games. You know, they luckily don't typically take it to a creepy like Pantsu place, but I think that, you know, Tokyo Mirage Sessions, the first Splatoon, this Splatoon, some of their other games, we are actually really seeing Nintendo building these like idol characters.
Arms.
Well, yeah, arms, absolutely. I'm just living. And, you know, a lot of people have noticed as well, you know, the POC representation strong in Splatoon 2, strong in ARMS. A lot of people also feel, you know, Nintendo is picking up the pace there as well.
Yeah, I have to ask, is Pearl or Marina team ice cream?
I don't know which is which. I know is that I am team ice cream, and whoever is team ice cream, I'm into.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to go team ice cream. Well, anyway, speaking of... July 15th, that's going to be part of EVO weekend, right?
Oh, yeah.
So we have Arika, who made the Street Fighter EX games. You know, we talked about this a little, I believe. You know, definitely with the April Fool's prank that they have. But I feel like, oh, yeah, because this is a follow-up, LOL. So basically, they are going to be showing a new playable title at EVO. So we will find out this weekend... What they have in store.
Yeah, this game, it looks really great. It really appears to be a modern-day revitalization of the game design and gameplay systems from Street Fighter EX. So I think that's awesome.
We will find out soon enough.
Indeed. We also have some release date info here. This week, Nintendo Switch will be getting Fatal Fury Special as its Neo Geo download. The adorable-looking Cat Quest will be making its way to Steam on August 8th and hitting PS4 and Switch later in 2017. We also have word here that Fate Extella will be releasing on Steam for the PC on July 25th, the same date as the Switch release in North America. We have Yomawari Midnight Shadows releasing on October 21st in North America, just in time for your Halloween horror gaming over on PlayStation 4, PS Vita, and PC via Steam. We have Naruto Shippuden Ultimate Ninja Storm Legacy Trilogy releasing in North America on August 25th, and that is, of course, for the PS4 and Xbox One platforms. And last but not least, the Japanese release of City Shrouded in Shadow will be releasing on October 19th. You may, of course, remember that City Shrouded in Shadow is the survival disaster sim. Has a lot of licensed Japanese properties in it, made by the people who used to make the Disaster Report series. And, you know, something interesting, you know, we recently got word that the giant mecha from Patlabor will be in this game. So it's now going to be like Ultraman, Patlabor, Evangelions. I think one of the angels from Evangelion has been confirmed. Godzilla, Mothra, and Gamera. So, I mean, this game is going to be pretty ridiculous.
Sounds like it.
Yeah, and, you know, all the way through it, you're just playing as some rando on the floor while these giant kaiju battle, and you're just trying to stay alive in the city. I'm loving it. We'll definitely be checking that out. Hopefully I won't have to import, but I bet I will. Luckily, I will have this episode to fall back on
right,
to teach me how to do it. All that having been said, that's it for our follow-ups, but I believe we have some...
News. Oh my god, news. All right, well, we have a little doomy and gloomy sort of news to start off with. This news comes from Sony Interactive Entertainment Japan that the Tomorrow Children will be terminating service in Japan on November 1st, 2017. After September 28th, you will no longer be able to buy Frontier Pack or Freeman dollars, and you will not be able to do share play as of that date either. And so this is just basically about a little over a year after the release. It is of note that this is only announced for Japan so far, but, you know...
I mean, you say a little over a year, but I want to be clear. When it's shutting down will be a little over a year. At this point where we are now, it's only been 10 months since the game came out in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, I know a lot of people weren't, like, super, super loving this game, but this is just really tragic to hear. I'm a big fan of the folks over at Q Games. I've talked about them quite a bit. So it's just really absolutely gutted to hear that something they put years of work into ended up not even lasting a year, really. You know, the decision's been made, the axe is falling. Something I do want to note is that the decision has been made and the axe is falling, but at this moment it's only in Japan. We have not yet heard of a worldwide termination of service, though I have to believe that such a thing is coming, because end support for just one territory. You know, if it's doing well in another territory, you just leave it up everywhere and collect even just the minor coin that comes in from the other territories. So I have to assume the end is near for this game altogether, and I just think that's really, really, really tragic.
Yeah.
All right. Well, in slightly cooler news, we also have word out of Bandai Namco at the Anime Expo last weekend that Tales of the Rays will be getting an English language release in North America this summer. This is the mobile Tales of game that tells a unique and original story with crossover elements. It launched in Japan in 2017, be coming to North America on iPhone and Android when it hits this summer.
Cool. We have word from Blizzard that Hearthstone's next expansion is going to be all about the Lich King. It is called Knights of the Frozen Throne. And what it's going to do is that your 9 heroes are going to be killed by the Lich King and raised as Death Knights, very similar to, you know, the story of the Death Knight in Wrath of the Lich King of World of Warcraft. But the way that this is going to play in-game is that there's going to be hero cards that will replace the hero that you're playing, give you a new hero power, some armor, and it will kind of transform that character into a different playstyle. I think this is a really cool way. You know, Death Knights were the first hero class in World of Warcraft. We've since then, you know, had the Demon Hunter as well. I think it's a really cool way to make it, like, a hero class. What do you think, Spike?
I'm really interested in how they're going to do this. I, you know, have a love-hate with Hearthstone as it is. I definitely think that, you know, because we've already had the Hearthstone fan base, like, dissect how the cards we've seen so far are going to impact the current meta, which, cool, guys, that sounds like fun to me. But, so it's really hard for me to really wrap my head around how the hero cards are going to really impact the way that the game flows currently. But frankly, if I'm being really real, I feel like I've played this game so many times and come up on people who I was so completely out-ammoed, out-firepowered by, that I was just completely outclassed by just from in terms of their cards, that at this point I'm willing to go for anything that's going to, like, get me at least a handful of fun games again.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to this expansion a lot. I'm really looking forward to how the hero cards really do interact and change the way that your chosen class might play. I think it's a really cool and neat idea for a gimmick, and I'm interested in seeing how it plays.
Me too.
We also have word here that the Netflix Castlevania series, which has been tremendously successful for Netflix in terms of viewership, though we don't have hard numbers, we do know that it has been already greenlit for a second season. The first season was only 4 total episodes. You can easily watch it in, you know, like an hour and a half, which is very pleasant. The second season is going to be twice that at an 8 episode count.
Excellent.
We also know that the same creative staff will be coming to make that second season happen. So if you liked the first season, you'll probably like the second. And Slaggy, before we started recording, we watched the entire series of Castlevania. What were your thoughts on it?
I really liked it. I mean, the interesting thing is that, I don't want to spoil it, but it's based off of Castlevania 3, which I'm sure...
Well, it's based on Castlevania 3 and Symphony of the Night.
And if you saw the trailers and stuff, you probably already kind of knew that anyway. So, I mean, it's interesting to think of, like, a game like Castlevania 3 that, you know, It was a NES game, a Famicom game. So, I mean, you know, it didn't have a lot of... I mean, for a Famicom game, I guess it did have quite a bit of story. But, you know, it's really interesting to see, you know, it's not, the whole thing isn't just Trevor Belmont whipping skeletons and gargoyles the whole time. So it's interesting to see the story fleshed out. And, you know, so far hitting the story beats that we'd expect from a Castlevania 3 adaptation. I really enjoyed it. I already want more of it. I'm anxious for season 2, which is probably going to be another year off. It is my guess, just the way that, you know, Netflix does the releases. But hey, that's better than it being a utter trash pile.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I just to dovetail into what you said, I thought that the way that they rolled the Symphony of the Night backstory stuff involving Alucard's mother and Dracula's lover really fit in super well with the Castlevania 3 backstory stuff. I've always been of the belief that Symphony of the Night presented Dracula in a way that was very sympathetic. I think it's interesting to see that carried back to the Castlevania 3 content, because obviously in that era of Castlevania games, Dracula wasn't a character at all, per se. He had no real motivation or storyline other than, I hate the Belmonts, I hate people. So I really think that it was a really great creative choice on that behalf of the writers. I think that it ended up coming out really well. It is super bloody, super violent, super gory, lots of profane language, so, you know...
Right up your alley.
I definitely found it a little bit like edgelord tryhard, very similar to like the Spawn show that was on HBO in the late 90s, early 2000s. But just like that Spawn show, I like it despite those elements. And it's funny, Slaggy, because you say it should be right up my alley, but I actually don't really get into stuff like that. Like in video games, that's fine, but for like movies or animation, it's generally a big turnoff for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to see how it turned out. Like, I was expecting it to be very Vampire Hunter D, and it is not. I would say it's not Vampire Hunter D, even though there's obvious parallels between those two franchises.
Absolutely. So, all right, well, we also have a few entries to talk about here on our Culture Club this week. Culture Club, of course, is where we take a look at some news stories in the games world that really caught our attention as gamers, sort of talking about what's going on, and, you know, not quite news, but still worth noting. And the first one is that we have a very interesting tease here out of Platinum Games. And this tease, which is awesome, comes from the recently started Platinum Games _J Twitter account, which is the new official Japanese language Platinum Games Twitter feed. The first day that the Twitter feed was live and active, they posted an image of Bayonetta. And this was Bayonetta 1 Bayonetta and Bayonetta 2 Bayonetta. One on top, the other on the bottom. And this has been interpreted a lot of ways, because the background for Bayonetta 2 is blue. The background for Bayonetta 1 is red.
Oh, you mean kind of like Joy-Con?
The way that these are arranged, a lot of people have viewed it as a reference to red and blue Joy-Cons. And when this was shown to Platinum, when it was RT'd out as like, hey, this matches the Joy-Cons with a photo attached, Platinum Games' accounts, plural, liked the tweet, which a lot of people felt was like a hint. A lot of people have felt that, you know, Bayonetta 2 Bayo being on top and Bayo 1 Bayo on the bottom, also another hint. So a lot of people felt this was a tease, Bayo on Switch maybe. For some people, of course, that wasn't quite enough. What we got the next day is a little more explicit. And we have here the Wonderful 101 characters in the foreground playing Wonderful 101, which is a ways off in the background. But what's interesting is that the Wonderful 101 characters playing Wonderful 101 are using Switch Joy-Cons, like in the puppy controller configuration,
yep,
to play the game. And the image, although over on Silicon Era, we'll be linking to you over on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
Does not have the image posted in high enough resolution to see the details. If you go to the original Twitter, you open up that image, you zoom in real close, like there's no capacity in which this is not a Switch controller. Obviously, you can just look at it and tell, but also it literally has like the Nintendo Switch branding on it. It is. There's no level,
yeah, and
on which
the
this
Joy-Con
is tongue in cheek. Like,
interestingly, I mean, I don't know if it's interesting for anyone else, but the Joy-Con look like Famicom controllers.
Yeah, I mean, that is true. I mean, again, you know, we are already seeing, like, decals in Japan, like, for Famicom color Joy-Cons and stuff, so I didn't put too much stock in that myself, but that is true. Either way, definitely some very interesting stuff here. And fingers crossed that we're going to be getting some Platinum games over on Switch, because it would be really fantastic to be able to take my favorite Tokusatsu Super Sentai 101 character game on the go with me.
Indeed.
We also have word here that there is a Kickstarter for a PC English language port of Arcana Heart 3 Love Max 6 Stars.
That's a mouthful.
Well, so this is the updated version of Arcana Heart 3. It adds two new playable characters, Minori Amanohana, Amanohara, and Ikor. This is, of course, super interesting to fans of the series, but something else that's interesting is that there are three stretch goals for the game that are currently being kept a secret by developer Examu, and a lot of people have noted that there are three, like, shadowy character designs in the Kickstarter materials on the page. There has been some word out of Examu that they're ready to create a fourth and final Arcana Heart game. So a lot of people feel like, you know, this Kickstarter is really about starting to build the base on which to build Arcana Heart 4.
Excellent.
Obviously, if you're not familiar with Arcana Heart, you don't have, you know, Japanese arcades near you or whatever. I understand that's true for a lot of people. You can easily check out Arcana Heart 3 Love Max, which is the original release, on PS3, PS Vita, and PC right now. It's available already.
Excellent.
We also have word here that Ubisoft has removed the 4th of July fireworks event from Watch Dogs 2 because they received so many complaints about the noise it brought to the game. Something that's, of course, really funny, I think, is that a lot of us are dealing with this in our real lives right now. You know, people in our neighborhood setting off fireworks at all hours of the day and night. Mm-hmm. I wish that we could all just complain to our games designer and have them removed.
Right? It's funny because someone from the Ubisoft community, community representative said, well, you may find them loud in game, they are really loud in real life, too. The sound carries over the water, and you can hear them all over the bay, and we're like, yep.
Yep, that's our life. Either way, I definitely think that that's interesting. Like, there's a level on which I think it's really cool that they listen to fans. There's another level on which I'm like, y'all whine too much. Like, just stop it. Turn down your volume if it's too loud.
Yeah, like, part of me is like, I'm sorry that people were having an unpleasant game experience, but I'm like, I think it's cool in the first place that they put this in the game.
Yeah, I love in-game events, so I don't know. I thought it was cool, but whatever. We also have word here that a prototype build of the uncompleted SNES Rayman game has been ripped and uploaded to the internet. So, you know, obviously we're not going to tell you where, but you can go out there and find a ROM of the SNES Rayman game and, you know, give it a play.
Yeah, I always think it's really cool when a piece of gaming history, you know, surfaces like this.
Absolutely. And before we get to our smash hit of the week, we have one more news story here for you. And this is word that the Five Nights at Freddy's fandom have convinced themselves that the creator of the series is once again trolling them. So we recently had a situation where Scott Cawthon, the creator of the series, had canceled the sixth main entry. He was, of course, in the middle of it. He had shared some like art and was doing some teases. He now says that he has canceled the game as of, I want to say this was, what, about a week and a half ago? But nobody actually believes him. He's been talking about how, you know, the magic for the series is gone for him. He wants to work on other stuff, you know, stuff like the movie and amusement park attractions. Those will continue being developed because they're manned by other people. But he himself just wants to get to work on something else. And basically, the community is just like, we don't believe you. Like, you have trolled us so many times and given us fake out announcements that we don't believe you. I find this really interesting and remarkable, and I can't really think of a precedent where someone announced that they were no longer developing and the user base was literally like, LOL, JK. What about you, Slay? What do you think?
Yeah, the Five Nights at Freddy's fandom is weird and largely comprised of trollish children. I'm probably going to get a lot of feedback slapping my hand for saying that and saying, no, I like Five Nights at Freddy's.
Speaking
too.
About slaps, who got me slapped yesterday because of comments I made on this podcast?
You, because you made the comments. and you knew that...
Rude and inappropriate. You literally brought up, oh, hey, I told so-and-so that you were about to get slapped. LOL, aren't you going to slap him? And then they did. That was rude.
I didn't think it would actually happen.
But yeah, you were saying Five Nights at Freddy's fandom, weird, getting slapped for saying they're mostly children.
Oh, no, it's just funny that this franchise has a history of definite playfulness in terms of its releases. You know, we've had like some that were like surprise releases, right? And so it's just as funny, and it'll be interesting to see what comes of this.
Absolutely. All right, this week for the smash hit, we have an article that Slagkick brought to my attention. Slaggy, would you like to talk about this link a little bit?
Yes, this is over on US Gamer. It is a interview called Robert Yang's New Game Asks, Can You Suck a Man's Gun on Twitch? And it's kind of a follow-up / smash hit because it follows up on our discussion about the Tea Room, which we talked about, which is, you know, looks at the queer history of the 1960s Mansfield, Ohio restroom sting for gay men, or I should say men seeking sexual encounters with men, you know, not to put a label on their sexuality. And it's, you know, because like someone like me, you know, who is very interested in queer history and has followed Robert Yang's games, I had read his kind of artistic statement that went with it. But for those who didn't, it's does a really good job of kind of outlining that queer history and also about like how the in-game statistics represent different things, like the chance of running into a person of color in game is, I think, about 5.82%, because that was the percentage of Mansfield, Ohio's African-American male population at the time. And that 23% of the time you are sucking a man's gun in the tea room, that it's a cop, because 23% is a statistic about abuse and violence from the police forces against LGBTQ community. So it's just, you know, there's a lot of people, I think, probably will focus on the sensationalism of it. Oh, look in a dude's gun. But, you know, there's a lot of history and a lot of things to say here, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
And I also applaud US Gamer for, you know, running a story like this.
Yeah, they're actually a bigger outlet than I would have expected to be running stories on this. I really do truly salute them for this. So, all right, well, all that having been said, it is time for us to have this discussion. Slaggy, so let's get this started. We're doing this discussion because we were asked on Twitter where to import from, I think, was the context of the question. So what we decided to do was just to really briefly talk about how easy it is to import these days. You know, I am a frequent importer. I would say probably one-third of my game purchases these days are import games.
Wow. I mean, I guess I shouldn't be surprised. I see the things you import.
Yeah. I mean, I import stuff physically all the time, but I also import digitally a lot, like especially for Switch, I'm sorry. I don't buy much from the North American eShop. I buy nearly everything from the Japanese eShop. And one of the big reasons for that, of course, is that because of the relative strength of the yen to the dollar, it's a little cheaper that way. You know, as we have noted in recent weeks and since the Switch released, when you download things off the eShop, more often than not, they will play in the language of the profile you load them in on your console. So if you buy ARMS, for example, I imported ARMS from the Japanese eShop. I actually did that because it went up over there like 16 hours before it went up over here.
Yep.
And I'm impatient enough that 16 hours for me is worth spending that money. Of course, it ended up being a little cheaper than buying it over here from our eShop, and I'm still playing it in English. And the reason why I do this, you know, I've heard people talk about how, I guess, some of, like, the Latin America eShops are actually even cheaper than the Japanese because of the strength of the dollar. But for me, I can't read those languages in case I am stuck to one of those languages.
Right.
Whereas with Japanese, I can still get through a game in Japanese. So for me, that's, you know, really where it comes down to. As a result, I would say 90% of my Switch games, I have something like 36 now. I think I think like 90% of them are from the Japanese eShop.
That's interesting. But also, so, I kind of am not surprised.
Yeah, right? What about you, Sagi? In the modern day, do you do too much importing?
You know, I haven't done a lot of importing at all. It hasn't necessarily been because of, like, apprehension about it. I mean, one of the things that you brought up is the language part. And, you know, now, like, you know, for example of the Switch, where it would do it, you know, ahead of time. Not ahead of time, well, but, you know, that it would play it in the English version. You know, that's not what I'm talking about. But, you know, for things like, you know, that are in Japanese, for example, there's only one notable case where that did not really present a barrier to me. And I'll talk about that a little later, or whenever you want me to, but,
Well, why not? Why not here?
So, I imported Pokemon Crystal because, you know, this was still during the Pokemon boom, but at the time, and it might have been because Pokemon Crystal came with the cell phone adapter thing, so, you know, there was still a chance. I say Pokemon Crystal, but I also imported Pokemon Green, so, so it was in those cases, and the reason being that there was no barriers because it was Pokemon, and it was based on, you know, Green being, you know, one of the original games, and Crystal being more or less Gold and Silver, you know. So, I mean, I really didn't need to know what it was saying to play those games. But, I mean, that's really the only time that I've imported a game that is not in a language that I can understand, or sorry, can't understand, rather. And I mean, I guess, you know, I've never really looked into importing games in Spanish, which I could possibly get through okay to an extent, because I don't really, I'm not really aware of, I mean, I can't really think of any games that were like, oh, well, there was the Spanish language release, but it didn't come out in English.
That could be interesting with some of the, like, Donkey Konga releases, which for each region had their own track listing.
Oh, that would be. And, you know, something like a rhythm game, you know, is definitely, I feel like there's a game, or like a puzzle game, you know, something where it's not text heavy. There's definitely less of a barrier. But, I mean, like, an RPG, you know, is definitely, is with Pokemon being an exception for me. You know, I don't think I could have imported, like, you know, Final Fantasy or Dragon Quest games or whatsoever, because, you know, I don't read Japanese.
Understandably. Okay, well, let's talk then a little more specifically about why to import. And, you know, I think I just hit some of the biggest reasons.
To import? Why not?
It's so funny, because in my head, when I was writing this out, I half expected you were going to make that exact joke. And it turns out I do know you well enough to predict that joke.
When to cat massage. Whenever.
So, yeah, but, you know, some of the biggest reasons, I think, are probably, you know, people want games as soon as they can play them. Language barrier be damned. You know, it can sometimes be economical when you're especially looking at games where you're looking for a physical copy, and maybe the regional release that would be your region got like a short printing.
Right.
And another big one, of course, is games that don't come out in other regions.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people
Never expect will come out.
Well, exactly. You know, and funny enough, I've imported in the past for that reason stuff like Tingle's Rosie Picked Rupee Land would be a good example of a game that got a
European
release. And so I imported a European copy.
I imported that off eBay for a gift for a Zelda fan.
Yeah.
That was like my other big import experience.
Yeah, and you know, that's I think a really viable one. And also, you know, especially you look at stuff like the Monster Hunter games. Frequent imports, because Capcom usually drags their feet on those, and we end up having to wait a year or more
for
the Japanese
release.
No,
Capcom dragging their feet and not putting out Monster Hunter games? You don't say.
And we do have a situation like that potentially arising with the Switch and the Monster Hunter Double Cross release on Switch.
Yep.
And so I think a lot of people are going to be looking at importing for that one as well.
Have you imported that yet for Switch?
It's not out yet.
Oh,
It comes out in August. I want to say August, like, 16th, but don't quote me on that. Around that date, I believe.
Ah, yeah. Well, I mean, I assume that you're going to be going on the eShop the day before here, because it would already be the next day in Japan. And, you know, something else that's interesting is we've talked about the Asia releases.
Oh, yeah, that's a great example, too, because a lot of times the Asian releases of particularly, like, anime games will end up with English language support on the disc. You know, I have some of the Super Robot Tyson games that have been released in that format. And, you know, so it's basically as good as having gotten a localized version. A lot of times the translations in these games are a little more literal. They don't have the level of polish that most of these bigger releases that do come out overseas get.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're playing Super Robot Tyson, are you really caring about, like, a polished translation?
Well, right, for the fans of those games, having it be a little less polished is like, oh, this is just like the fan subs of my youth.
Ah!
I do also want to note that the Monster Hunter Double Cross release in Japan is actually August 25th, so my bad.
Okay, you were close, though.
So, you know, those are some good reasons to import. Why wouldn't someone import? And Slaggy, I want you to help me here, because for me, I'm such an importer, I'm so knee-deep in it, like, I'm not really sure why people wouldn't be willing to import.
I mean, we talked about language barrier. Maybe you don't want to contribute to the global economy. No, but seriously, I mean, I could think of a...
Damn globalists!
I could think of, like, your whatever you were trying to import is not region-free, the hardware.
Excellent. Well, that actually gives us a great little talking point here. Let's talk real quick about the last systems that were completely sealed off region-wide. Talk about the Wii U and the 3DS. Slaggy, do you have a Wii U? Do you have a 3DS?
Let's think. For the sake of people who maybe are tuning in the first time, yes, I have both.
Brilliant. Have you ever imported games for either of these platforms?
I have not.
And why is that?
I mean, I was going to say there's not any games for... But that's not true. I mean, maybe for Wii U. But they are not region-free.
Excellent, excellent. So, Wii U, 3DS...
I'm like, wait, are you trying to trick me?
There was no trick question there. The Wii U and the 3DS, both region-locked. Fortunately, they're kind of the only region-locked consoles that have released in the recent past. And they're both consoles that are sort of on their way out now. But what that did mean for the Wii U and the 3DS is that if you were serious about importing, up until the operating systems had been cracked, which they both currently are, so you can import on both of them a little easier now. But before that happened, if you wanted to play import games, your best bet was basically to buy a console from the region you're trying to import from.
Which you did.
Yeah, I did, but most people... choose not to do that, and I don't really blame them. In the modern day, though, if you are trying to hack your Wii U or 3DS, and we here at GameBuoy.org encourage you to do whatever you want with your property, but
we take
be
no liability
because we take no responsibility for whatever happens to it. You know, you can check out any number of guides on the Wii U or 3DS looking for Wii U. Region exploit, 3DS region exploit. You end up having to basically load up some save files typically that have been modified on the internet to crack your console and exploit it. And then once you've cracked it to, you know, basically just overwrite that region checking, as well as a whole host of other things that we won't really go into here. But that does unlock the world of interesting games that never came to North America on these platforms. On the Wii U, that's not a whole lot. But you would be looking at stuff like there's some Taiko no Tatsujin releases on the Wii U that are pretty sparkly. Yeah. But the 3DS actually had a metric shit ton of games come out in Japan and not North America. We've talked about a lot of them here on the show over the years. But it really does just bear repeating, there are a lot of Japanese 3DS games that never came out here, and a ton of them are worth your time if you're the kind of person who's listening to this show. But, you know, for whatever reason, these games never crossed over, and now they're stuck on a console where it's not easy to import. I actually think it kind of sucks that there are hundreds of games that, you know, many of which are really worth playing that people in North America aren't really going to get to experience wide. I think that sucks.
And you're talking about, like, you know, why import? I mean, certain genres that Western, or not necessarily Western developers, like, maybe that Western developers aren't, you know, really
exploring.
Catering to, but also that Japanese studios don't want to bother because it would be financial loss for them, because they would have a very small audience, you know, they would lose money on translating. So, you know, for some of these, I mean, you know, like, I mean, RPGs, JRPGs.
Although, oh, yeah.
I mean, I say that, and I mean, we do okay for JRPGs, I feel.
Oh,
okay.
Absolutely, especially on the 3DS. But then you look at, you know, there was stuff like the EX Troopers spinoff of Lost Planet, which was a really cool, like, action shooter on 3DS that actually has some of the best, like, 3D cel-shaded graphics on the 3DS I've ever seen, that, for whatever reason, never released here, even though I actually think, from a gameplay perspective, it would have done really well here. So it's just, it sucks. And Capcom was kind of notorious during this generation, or that generation, I should say, for not bringing stuff over. You know, the Monster Hunter games sat in limbo for a long
time. Capcom not bringing things over? Gasp.
Phoenix. You know, even some of, like, the Ace Attorney games didn't make it over, which is, I think, remarkable considering how popular those turned out to be worldwide. There's the entire Geist Crusher series that never came over on the 3DS. And those are games that, you know, if you like Monster Hunter, but you want, like, hey, what if Monster Hunter was, like, a Super Sentai game? That's what Geist Crusher is. You form a team of colored superheroes that all have superpowers based on, like, the elemental association of the color they were assigned, and you go out and fight monsters Manhunt style. It's really cool for people who are into a certain game type and entertainment media type. And I'm a big fan of those two things,
yeah,
Super Sentai and Manhunt. So it
I
is
almost
perfect
feel like,
for me.
We're going to need to do Import 102, which is like, here are some worthwhile franchises and games that you should look into importing, and here's where you can find them.
Oh, man. Well, but let's move forward a little bit here. And, you know, I want to talk a little bit about the PSP and the Vita. And, you know, the PSP is dead, but for whatever reason, and I say for whatever reason, but, you know, the PSP was very popular in Japan, largely because of Monster Hunter.
Still getting some releases up until years ago, right?
Yeah, up until like a year ago.
And not necessarily for Monster Hunter, but, you know, just in general, you'd be like, available for PSP?
Vita, another situation where, you know, Western side, dead, still going strong in Japan. So as a result, there are tons of PSP and Vita games that will never come to North America. The cool thing is the PSP and Vita both are completely region free. You can use accessories from either of these in any territory. You can play games from them in any territory. They will unfortunately be in their native language. This is not a situation like the Nintendo Switch situation, but still,
well, I mean, especially with the
literally
Vita,
hundreds, possibly thousands of games between these two platforms that you've probably never played in and might be interested in.
Right. I mean, especially the Vita, which, you know, when we hear a game here being released for Vita, it's like, really?
And, you know, it's really cool, really, for the PSP especially. I have a lot of friends who their first real import console was the PSP.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, no, I have friends who, like, the first time they ever imported was, like, oh, for the DJ Max Portable series.
Oh.
I have one friend in particular.
Are you talking about Shane?
I have one friend in particular who his first import was one of the Poppin' Music PSP games. It had the Evangelion theme on it or something.
Oh, wow.
You know, there's also been a lot of fighting games in particular. You know, now we get all of the big Gundam games here in North America. It's pretty cool, but that was a fairly recent development. Back in the PSP days, there were so many Gundam games coming out. A lot of them really cool, require very little reading aptitude, and they just, you know, throw you down in a Gundam and have you fight. That includes the Gundam Versus series. And, you know, the cool thing is in 2017, looking for PSP import games, you can go on American Amazon and find a ton of these for like $9.99.
Oh, wow.
A lot of them even with Prime shipping, although typically those ones are more like $14.99. But
okay, but still.
But still, yeah, you can actually do a lot with a small amount of money importing these really cool games that you have no idea what are in. So they're just going to be surprise after surprise after surprise. I find that really fulfilling and rewarding. I actually really enjoy experiencing games like that.
Mm. You know, you mentioned I guess you were mentioning like Gundam, which isn't exactly related, but maybe think of like the Jump Ultimate, J-Stars Victory Versus, or one of those games, Jump Ultimate.
Talking about multiple different games here.
Well, yeah, where anime licensing things could present an issue, although I guess these days Funimation is basically everything, right?
Well, and that actually has made a difference. One of the games you mentioned, J-Stars Victory Versus, actually did come out in North America because all of this series were licensed here in North America by one or two studios, so it was actually pretty easy to get their ducks in a row on that now. Not like the old days.
But yeah,
and
I
say not like the old days because one of my favorite import games of all time is a DS game called Jump Ultimate Stars.
Right.
It's a melee fighter that crosses over literally all of the very many Shonen Jump properties into a Melee fighting game. I actually, while I was in Japan, bought two additional copies of this so that I can at least have three-player brawls at my house when people have their DSs and 3DSs with them. It's a game that's good enough that I feel happy knowing I own multiple copies.
Yeah, I remember there was a certain level of download play available.
Yeah, yeah, but it was sort of limited to, like, a small handful of characters rather than the literally 100 different franchises.
Yeah, like Goku, Monkey D. Luffy, and, like, two others.
Probably Naruto and, I don't know, someone from Death Note, maybe. So, anyway, though, you know, Gundam games, great to import on the PSP. There are also some really great Macross games on the PSP. So, you know, if you're looking for those kinds of, like, early to mid-2000s otaku games, that's where the PSP really shines. If you're interested in playing some of those games, PSP is a no-brainer. They also got some really cool releases, like Konami did a lot of, like, retro collections. They did, like, a Salamander portable collection, a Parodius portable collection, a Twinbee portable collection, a Gradius portable collection, whereas basically, like, each one of these collections would have, like, all of that series' releases on one little UMD disc. And they were just a really great value. And, you know, some of those releases on these discs never made it over here anyway, particularly like the Parodius games, but also the Twinbee disc had some that we had never gotten. Salamander, Gradius, obviously. So definitely some cool stuff to be had in those packages. Daisen Ryaku, which is fantastic. We've talked about that over the years. It's like a big strategy, like military strategy game. Got some PSP releases that can be found pretty cheap now. For Vita, of course, you know, and that's a little bit of a weird situation. We actually get a lot of Vita games over here, even still. Some stuff that in previous generations we never would have gotten, stuff like the Hatsune Miku games. So it's a little harder for me to find good Vita games to recommend you import. It's also hard for me to find good Vita games. A good friend of mine recently got a Vita. She had been saving for a Switch, but got tired of having to wait for stores to get their allocations and just
That's
bought a Vita. Yeah, I mean, I get it. I don't think it was the best life choice, but I get it. And, you know, she was asking for, like, Vita game recommendations, and I'm like, I can't think of any Vita games that aren't
Persona
better experienced elsewhere.
Persona 4 Golden, Gravity Rush, oh wait, they remastered it. Persona 4 Golden.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
But yeah, especially with the Vita more or less being dead here, I mean, I guess if you want to keep playing Vita games, then importing is going to eventually become your only option.
Well, and, you know, it does need to be said, while we do get more anime games here than ever, we don't get everything. So, like, I have, like, some Vita import games that are, like, Madoka Magica is a good example. So, you know, if you're into these more niche type game experiences, they are there on Vita in Japan as well, and you could import those. Again, you know, the cool thing is, in the modern day, you can literally just go to Amazon and import video games. It's very easy. But if you're not willing to do that, you know, there's stuff like AmiAmi.com is a really great site to import from. I generally recommend people stay away from PlayAsia due to their politics, but I will say, you know, there have been a very limited number of times that I have ordered from them, even still, because they're the only place that had a physical copy of something that I needed. And I have always found dealing with them directly to be a very positive experience. I was importing with them back in the PS2 days, getting, you know, like the Capcom Cross Namco crossover strategy RPG.
Oh, yeah.
That was sort of like the proto Project Cross Zone. And back then, in fact, I actually got a phone call from one of their sales reps, literally like, "Hey, I saw you place this order. I just want to confirm you have a way to play Japanese games." I actually thought that that was, like, a really cool level of professional conduct and, like, literally reaching out to make sure that you weren't burning your own customers. So, you know, I actually do, on many levels, think that they're a great company. It's just their politic is messed up.
And, I mean, to be fair, that could have been largely a social media person, but, yeah.
Yeah, but I actually feel, for me, in 2017, the easiest way to import is for the Vita. In particular, you can make a Japanese PSN account, give it its own memory card on the Vita, and then just anytime you have that memory card slotted in, you'll be able to go to the Japanese PSN shop and just download whatever you want.
Now, do you need to enter a fake Japanese address?
So you will need to, but it's super easy. You know, they don't check, so you can literally just, like, look up an arcade you like and use the address of that arcade in Japan.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like, I mean, you could literally just look up, like, Club Sega Shinjuku and enter the address for that, and it would check out just fine.
Wow.
I actually, for all of my accounts now, use the address of the Airbnb I stayed at while I was in Japan, because I know it's a real house. But you can, and I have in the past, just used various, like, landmarks and never got in trouble with it. I typically, when I'm doing my JPSN purchases, I buy PSN cards from, like, Japanese Amazon. Japanese Amazon will also ship a lot of stuff to North America, but they'll do their codes digitally and with no markup. So you'll end up getting, like, $50 in credit for, like, 45 American dollars.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's pretty cool stuff. To me, that is probably the easiest way to import. I do that also for Switch, as you may have noticed earlier. I'll buy a physical copy if I want, like, a real keepsake or whatever, but for the most part, every couple weeks, I just buy a $50 points card and then just buy stuff as it comes out, and I'm pretty happy with it. I want to talk a little bit now about the PS3 and PS4, and that is because the PS3 and PS4 are also fantastic import machines, neither one region-locked. And that is with a little bit of an asterisk. The capability to region lock does exist on these systems. It is activated on a per publisher basis.
Right.
As it stands on the PS3, there was exactly two games that were region locked, and they are both the Persona 4 Arena games, and just the two releases of that. And that's because they didn't want people doing, like, reverse importing from territories that hadn't gotten their release yet.
Yeah, something something Atlas.
Pretty merch. But, you know, in terms of the games, import games available on these platforms, there's all kinds of cool stuff. PS3, for example, had a Dot Hack fighting game that came on a bonus Blu-ray disc with the Dot Hack movie.
What?
So I bought it. I actually have this. It's a really cool little fighting game. It's kind of rudimentary because it's just like
a bonus game.
But it's really cool to play and see, especially if, like me, you have a soft spot for the Dot Hack series. You know, they also did a game like that on Macross. So there's a Macross PS3 game, and it's basically like one of the old PSP Macross games, but upscaled to be like an HD experience. So it's a really cool thing. A ton of music games that we never got, Taiko-type games and what have you, Monster Hunter games that released on PS3 but did not come out in North America. Mostly like an upport of a PSP release, but it still counts.
Yeah, you know, like you said with those rhythm games, especially if you're, you know, definitely into, like, the Japanese music and these types of rhythm games, that's definitely an incentive.
Well, and that's exactly, you know, there's a PS4 Taiko no Tatsujin game coming soon. I doubt it'll get a North American release, but even if it did, I would still import because I want, you know, the Super Sentai openings, the Kamen Rider openings,
yeah,
the anime themes. You know, I want all those. I dig that. Obviously, you know, a lot of cool, like, special collector's editions that come out in Japan but not in other places. So if the language barrier isn't a problem for you, you know, you could end up getting some really cool trinkets to go, you know, on display in your game room or whatever.
Yeah, you had mentioned that the other week with the Fire Emblem Warriors, Musou, right?
About
cool collections.
Exactly. And, you know, because that is going to be a Switch game, actually, you probably will be able to import it and just play it in English. I don't know why Nintendo let that happen, but I'm so glad they did. So, you know, we also, of course, have the 360 and the Xbox One. There's not a whole lot to import on these consoles.
Just because Microsoft having a market share in Japan is like, what?
But
when I say Japan,
360 got a lot of really great arcade perfect cave shmup ports that are not really available on other consoles. So, you know, if you're interested in that kind of stuff, you know, we did end up getting Death Smiles and a couple of the others, but we didn't get all of them. So that is something that you might be interested in importing on the 360. For the Xbox One, I have only imported on the Xbox One in the case of, like, Dark Souls 3, because it came out in Japan weeks before it came out here, and I wanted to hop in.
Puyo Puyo Tetris.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I also imported Puyo Puyo Tetris on the Xbox One, because at the time we didn't think it would ever release in North America.
And then it got a Switch release.
And then it got a Switch and PS4 release. So we did get it.
The Switch release is the best. because it's on Switch.
That does, of course, bring us to the Switch. We've talked a lot about the how Switch importing works on this show, both today and otherwise. I mean,
it's kind of a big step forward for Nintendo, really.
Well, it's weird because it is a step forward, but, you know, they had previously, the last generation, taken a step backward. In previous generations, you know, the GBA, well, the Game Boy, from the original Game Boy up to the new 3DS, or I'm sorry, the 3DSi, up to the DSi, you could import wantonly as much as you want. The DSi is where we first got portable region locking from Nintendo. And that's only on DSi exclusive titles would have region locking.
Because the Tingle games were DS, not 3DS. Now that is correct. Right.
So to go to a region lock for platform, even for one generation, the 3DS generation, Nintendo got a lot of negative press about that.
Was GameCube region locked?
But for their home consoles, there has been region locking since the NES or Famicom days.
Right. I mean,
typically, it was just a simple physical barrier. So if you were importing Super Famicom games, there was a little tab on the inside of the cartridge slot that if you ground it down, you could then just fit Super Famicom carts in your console and play them just fine. The more common thing that I think a lot of us did was just use like a Game Genie without entering any codes. Because it effectively just elongated the contacts for the connection dock so that you didn't have to file anything away. So that's what I did for that. A lot of us also did that for the Nintendo 64, which was the same situation. Identical hardware and just, like, a physical issue. Then for the GameCube, of course, it was a software-based region lock. It did end up, you know, finding exploits, but that continued for the Wii and the Wii U. But now here we are for the Switch. It's super easy to import. I do want to note, you know, if you're getting into GameCube importing, Wii importing, so many great titles on the GameCube and the Wii that never came out over here. And a lot of them require no Japanese language knowledge. It's a little bit outside of the scope of what we're talking about here this episode, which is just how to get your feet wet. But definitely, you know, if you want to have a conversation about that, reach out to me over on Twitter. You can find me at @SpikePoint. Obviously, you know, right in here in the show, if you want to hear more about like some of our legacy fave imports, it's a topic that we're both pretty well versed in, actually. But let's sort of start to wrap this up a little bit here. I want to talk a little bit more about the costs and fees of importing and a little bit more about our own experiences with it and then move on. This has been a double show week. We did an episode like 6 days ago. We're already back at you. My voice is regretting it. As far as the costs and fees of importing go, you know, for me, I actually feel like I save money by importing.
That wasn't always the case, right?
Exactly. Before it became so easy to get import games on Amazon, before it became so easy to just connect to another region's shop. I wanted to note, I noted on Switch, you can very easily connect to Japanese eShop. You make a Japanese user profile and you're done. Like, there's no weird swapping out of memory cards. You literally just make a Japanese profile and you're done. You can do it from your main menu. It takes all of 5 minutes to do. It's not a problem at all. You can also, on the Xbox platform, go into your live settings and just change your language. And if you change your language to Japanese, it will connect you to the Japanese Xbox shop. Huh. So, you know, between doing stuff like that, between getting imports and even older, harder to find imports off of Amazon, both Amazon in America or Japanese Amazon, which will ship internationally now, it's just very easy to get stuff at the same cost you would be paying for a domestic product or get it cheaper. It is typically a little more expensive if you're going the Play Asia route, you're going to AmiAmi, you're going to any of those kinds of specialty shops, you're typically going to pay a little more. Obviously eBay can be a fantastic resource for getting obscure or just
one of the earliest ways to do it.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I actually had never ordered anything off eBay until like the last year, basically. I was not really an eBay person.
Right? Not just or for eBay ever?
Ever, yeah.
Really?
I don't trust people. I don't want someone else's secondhand shit that hasn't been checked out by an authoritative person. That can't surprise you.
I mean, for gaming, I'm surprised, but I'm surprised that you weren't like, oh, this was an old issue of NME that had an old Morrissey interview that I wanted to have.
It is my actual, like, worst case nightmare that I would, like, buy a video game and it would arrive and it would be, like, a cartridge with a broken, like, board or something.
Or a bootleg game.
Right? I mean, I've gotten bootleg games shopping locally for games that, you know, were taken in by the shop and not checked out thoroughly enough by staff in the store. So, yeah, no, I'm extremely dubious about secondhand stuff sometimes, and that's actually, like, something I'm really trying to work against.
Yes, I mean, it's very nice that in the modern day there are more legitimate avenues. Like, I have to be honest, I don't even remember where I imported my Pokemon games from. I think I just found a website, and they ended up being totally fine. Green
that's awesome.
Crystal, but,
you know, I had a PS1 experience. I didn't order it, but a good friend of mine ordered it off of eBay, and it was a Super Robot Wars Alpha for PS1, and the copy that came back, she paid like $69 for it, and it was straight up like in a photocopied manual, like it was a CDR that she paid basically $70 for a bootleg copy of a PS1 game.
Wow.
And she got that off eBay, and I'm like, nope, that is not happening to me.
I mean, that makes sense.
So it's funny because you probably know exactly who I'm talking about. We don't need to talk about identities on air. Anyway, costs and fees. Basically, again, there's actually some savings to be found in importing right now. Obviously, that information could change. That's sort of how the world market works with regard to currency and
exchange
rates.
How is shipping from Amazon Japan?
It is not too bad. It's typical Amazon. Obviously, your Prime benefits here will not cross over to there. You're making a separate account that is completely unattached, but prices are still not that bad. You know, I end up, because for all my Super Sentai stuff, I tend to import from, like, Hobby Link Japan, and that all is a ton of money. It's not like that from Japanese Amazon. Japanese Amazon is totally cool. So, Saigi, do you have any more experiences with import gaming that you'd like to talk about?
Not really. I mean, I would say my familiarity with import gaming has been more from watching you import and playing imported stuff than actually importing myself. But, I mean, this episode really makes me feel like, oh, I really should, especially with having, like, you know, all the consoles I have, it's super easy to import. I mean, except for the Wii U and the 3DS, but, you know, kind of on the way out.
Yeah, for me, the coolest, my favorite thing about importing is music games. I love importing music games. I went to Japan earlier this year. I talked about it here on the show a lot. I ended up buying so many old music games for, like, PS1 that, like, had, like, special controllers, which I bought. And I ended up coming back with, like, 20 different PS1 music games. Like, all these different iterations of Bimani, Poppin', etc. I just think that if nothing else, if you're not really interested in import gaming because of language barrier stuff, you're generally not comfortable, like, figuring things out in a game, I would still recommend you just take a look at the music games. We have, you know, a new Taiko no Tetsujin coming for PS4. There's also a new Taiko game coming out for Switch in Japan that's going to have a completely different track list, as I understand it. So, you know, definitely some good opportunities there if you're looking to dip your toe in the water. As I said before, you know, easiest way probably just to make another region account for the online shop of the console of your choice. Otherwise, literally just go to Amazon, type in Monster Hunter Switch import. You'll turn up some hits. Maybe not yet since the game isn't out, but once the game is out, it will be that easy to import.
Excellent.
Yeah. All right. Well, all that having been said, we will link you to a tutorial on how to make a Japanese PSN account, because PSN is the one territory where it's a little more difficult. Otherwise,
yeah, as you mentioned,
the other territories and the other platforms, much easier to make an account on. Super straightforward. I don't think you need a tutorial or anything, but we will be linking that over on GameBuie.org.
GameBuie.org. And I'd like to do our social links, unless you have anything else to wrap
nope,
up.
Nope, let's
I'd
do
like
it.
To do our social links right now to touch on people's experiences with importing, and then we'll get to any other tweets and such afterwards. Starting out on Facebook, where we asked, this week we talk about import gaming. Have you ever imported? Got any questions about it? Renee A. says, yes, I've imported in the past with Sega Saturn and SNES.
Yeah.
I'm surprised how much I was missing. There used to be a few shops that had import Saturn games in the store, which was amazing at the time. I only ever imported one game on the SNES, and thankfully I still have it. It's more for sentimental value, really. Over on Twitter.
Did he say what game it was?
No.
What game was it? Don't leave us hanging.
I'm like, I'm assuming Final Fantasy IV? I know that's one of his favorite games.
Oh,
but
that's a good guess.
Your Enzyme over on Twitter saying, as far as imports go, the only thing I imported was a 64 gigabyte memory card for my Vita. Gotta store those games. Yeah, that's a good thing to import. I wasn't even thinking about that. Oh Hey DJ says, literally me running to the mailbox when I imported Power Stone 2. It is a gif of someone jumping over a fence. It might be Joanne the Scammer, I'm not too sure. But it's an amazing gif, and I know DJ loves that Power Stone 2. That retro code asking...
Yeah, he has really good taste.
That retro code asking, since all current consoles are region-free, why hasn't there been an increase in importing? And is digital the new importing for new players? I mean, we kind of talked about that as far as digital making it super easy. What do you think? Like, have you noticed more people in your gaming sphere importing with the digital marketplace making it so easy? Digital downloads?
I mean, I think we've kind of spoken directly to that.
I mean, because that retro code seems to think that maybe from what he has seen, there hasn't been an increase. I mean, I would assume just unfamiliarity with how easy it is, or, you know, can I make an account in Japan? Is it going to steal my information? You know, just not knowing about how easy it really is. JD said, I imported a bunch of music games that can get a stateside release, DDR, IIDX, the like.
And, you know, I actually have to say to that retro code, I actually think there has been an increase in importing. You know, the Switch is probably the easiest way for me to talk about this, because I, on my own friends list, you know, the Japanese release of Disgaea 5 was on launch day in Japan, and then in the rest of the world, it was months later. But there were times where on my own friends list on my Switch, I was not the only one playing Disgaea 5. People I know who had never, ever imported in their life. One in particular, a buddy of mine named DW, who he saw me playing Disgaea and was like, hey, how did you get that so early? And I was like, oh yeah, I imported it from the shop. I basically told him how to make a Japanese account. He went and did it himself. And then he was that was so easy. I'm going to do that in the future for music games.
That's awesome.
So, you know, I actually do think there has been an increase in importing. I know that when Dark Souls 3 went up on the Xbox One shop, it was, you know, I think Kotaku or someone had even done an article on, like, you know, wow, there are so many English-speaking players on the multiplayer server already for, you know, like the invasions or whatever. I would actually disagree with you that there hasn't been an increase. I absolutely
think
there has.
Well, I mean, to be fair, maybe...
I'm just saying I disagree. I'm not coming for him.
Oh, I know. And I mean,
it's okay to think different things.
You know, I mean, that retrocode's interactions with gamers is definitely different than yours.
Girl, that's literally my point.
Girl. Well, thank you for the feedback. We'll wrap up with a few more tweets when we get to our social links time proper.
Indeed. But before then, let's start winding down by talking about what's up.
I said, hey, what's going on?
This week, I've had a little bit of a light week this week due to the fact that we just recorded like 6 days ago. This week, I played some Jackbox. I was at a party yesterday. Had a really great time playing Quiplash 2, Trivia Murder Mystery Party or whatever.
And TKO.
TKO is always a blast. I actually ordered my first TKO shirt, so that's going to be exciting when it finally arrives.
Yes, and let's just leave it at that.
Excellent. And, you know, I also played Final Fantasy XIV this week. Quite a bit, you know, did some leveling for my samurai. Got my samurai leveled up a bit, did my cactpots, you know, every day, ran some dungeons, and mainly just focusing on progressing and finishing up that Heavensward story content so that I can get into the Stormblood story content. Saiki, I know you bought a jump potion to skip over the Heavensward stuff since
you hadn't done it at all.
You shouldn't have shame. You're free to make the choices you make.
I'm the microtransaction queen.
But I do want to know, what do you think of the Stormblood content since you paid to be able to skip to it right away?
Done the Stormblood content right away. The big thing.
Any of it?
No. I've been working on leveling classes. Like, see, the thing is that the main thing I wanted was to be able to play Dark Knight, which has become like my main job now. And that was locked behind 2.x content. And which, you know, I mean, I had barely just finished that.
But you had finished it, so you could have unlocked Dark Knight without that.
No, I had finished 2.0. I had not finished all of the other patch content.
Oh, so you were still behind in the A Realm Reborn patch content.
Yes, I was. And the thing is, it was only an $8 difference for that and the Heavensward one. So I was like, eh, you know. And, you know, some people are like, oh, well, the Heavensward story was really good. But I mean,
well,
for
I'm
me.
I'm not going to shade you on any of that. I just figured since you, you know, paid to skip it all, that you would have skipped it all.
No, but.
That having been said, you've explained your reasoning and it makes sense.
Well, what it's done for me is that it has really allowed me to, when I want to start that Stormblood content, I can jump in right away. But for now, it's really freed me.
I had asked a simple question. Is it not my What's Up anymore?
Oh, I thought because...
That's what I was saying.
Oh, I thought we were, because we basically played the same things, I thought we were going to, like, kind of share. But
then, well,
okay.
You never said, why didn't you say that?
Oh, well, then go ahead. How are you, I know you really seem to be enjoying Samurai from what you've told me. Would you like to talk to the audience about that?
I like it a lot. You know, I really like the class aesthetic, which is a lot more important to me than maybe it should be. I'm
starting to sound like me.
The class story a fair bit. You know, and I really enjoy the rotation and the focus on just, like, damage. Some people have told me that, like, oh, you're going to have some problems getting into a raid because they don't bring a lot of raid utility. But my other main was Dragoon. I still got in raids then, and I did not contribute to the utility much then.
Right. I know you also played a lot of Monk before. Coming from someone who has played a lot of melee classes, like, how would you...
Well, it's kind of the perfect midway point for me between Monk and Dragoon. I feel like I'm always moving and doing something, always positioning myself to be in the right spot to get, you know, all my combo buffs in, but still always working on that forward flow in the Monk style of having that right, like, rhythm to my clicks and everything. So I'm finding it really rewarding so far.
Yeah,
maybe it'll be completely different at 70, but... You know, in the high 50s now, I'm getting a lot out of it, really enjoying it.
Well, you know, with 4.0, they've tried to really make the rotations be a little bit pared down because they were starting to get some action bar bloat, which I know Warcraft has.
Slaggy, I know. I was playing the game through it all.
I was speaking to our listeners.
Well, okay, well, if we're doing this merged What's
no,
Up,
go
why don't
ahead.
You talk about yours?
I was trying to ask about you... And your melee classes.
And the other game I played a lot of this week, and I played a lot of this week, was Mario Kart 8. You know, as playing online pretty much every night this week for at least a little while. Had a lot of Twitter friends randomly pop into my games, which is always cool. But just having a lot of fun with Kart 8 still. What about you, Slaggy? What have you been playing?
The same. Let's move on. I'm not going to do that after I've made
oh,
such a point.
No.
So, yeah, Jackbox is a lot of fun. You know, Jackbox 3, really great release. It's available for Switch, but we were playing on an Xbox One because the party we were at, they, you know, didn't have a Switch.
And you actually stuck around in the game room a little longer than I did. I guess you also played that sound game.
Right. We ended up going to... Jackbox 2, which has earwax, which is also really cute. You know, you pick two sound effects to, for example, one of them was Slag Kick's first kiss. So you can imagine what people were doing for that. Monkey
Everyone was just playing silence because it hasn't happened yet.
Rude.
I factually know that to not be true, or else I wouldn't have said it.
I've also been playing some Kart 8, not as much as you. While I was playing yesterday... with you and Salker, I was like, I really should spend more time on, like, the single-player stuff to unlock, like, the blue standard wheels and stuff, because I have not really unlocked a lot, just because I play so much of it multiplayer, so I probably should do that, but most of my time's been with Final Fantasy XIV. As I mentioned, I've been playing a lot of Dark Knight. I'm really enjoying the story quest that goes with it, and just really enjoying learning how to tank in Final Fantasy XIV. I mean, there's definitely, you know, because of the way that A Realm Reborn borrows a lot of elements from more modern MMOs, which, you know, we'll kind of talk about in our Final Fantasy XIV episode, an 11 episode that we're, you know, we got in the pipeline. That and healing, I feel like, you know, my experience as a tank and a healer in World of Warcraft definitely have helped that. But, you know, there's still a learning curve. And, you know, as with World of Warcraft, funny enough, Dark Knights, like Death Knights, at least at one point, are kind of a little bit squishier of tanks compared to, like, Paladins, which everyone else is doing, because, like, Paladins have shields and blah, 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 I don't know. But, you know, I'm really just enjoying it, putting a little time into Astrologian as well, which is a really fun healing class. Yeah, and, like, what I was starting to say is that Even though I have not started on Stormblood content yet, having that ability to that whenever I decide I want to go ahead and jump into that feels very freeing for me. And I know that's just, you know, I mean, it might be in like an artificial construct or whatever, but you know, I like having, knowing that that's open to me when I want to start. And for me, like, it's really allowed me to be like, okay, well, you know, my friends are kind of focusing on getting that Heavensward content, so I'm going to work on catching up on some second and other jobs. You know, I've been, like I said, working on Dark Knight, which is in its 50s now. I'm working on Astrologian. And so, you know, I've been trying to start a little bit of Disciples of the Hand, which are the crafting ones as well. So just being able to focus on whatever jobs I want, basically, and whatever content I want without knowing, oh, there are literally weeks of playtime of patch content that are going to prevent me from catching up with the content that I want to play with my friends when that time comes. I find that very freeing. So that's been about it, because it's been a lot of Final Fantasy XIV. Really enjoying that. I guess that means it's time for our social links, and we have to mention that you can always tweet at us with, even if it's not a question of the week, if you just want to say hi, if you have an episode request. I say tweet, but you can also mail us, blah, blah, blah. Let's get to that. We like your Facebook likes. We effing love Twitter. We like to thank you for your likes, subscriptions, ratings, reviews, whatever they call them on the different things for iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, anything else. That's where we're at. But if we're somewhere else we should be, please let us know. You can visit us on Facebook at facebook.com/GameBuoy. Tweet us at GameBuoy.org with the .org spelled out D-O-T-O-R-G.
At GameBuoy.org with the .org spelled out D-O-T-O-R-G.
And MailBuoy at GameBuoy.org is our email. As mentioned, I did want to get to just a tiny bit of tweets that did not apply to our question of the week. First coming from Your Enzyme, saying, I was going to say Max and Chloe, but didn't know if we can include any relationships that weren't explicitly said to be couples. Shrugging face, I don't want to say emoji, but like, you know, emoticon. And then O'Krylo saying, if you need a guest for Final Fantasy 11, 14 cast, I'm available, but I've only had experience with 14. Thank you for putting the offer out there. We're still kind of working on a bunch of different things in the pipeline, but, you know, we always value your voice regardless. So please reach out to us, share your ideas and your things that you want to hear us talk about, because we do this for you out in Radioland.
We
and
sure
a little bit
do.
For ourselves, but, you know, it makes it worthwhile to have people listening. And I think that just about does it, right? So
yep.
Speaking of worthwhile listening, what are some shout-outs that you have for our exit lead here?
You should go check out the Voice of Geeks Network over at VogNetwork.com, where you can hear us as well as such fantastic shows as Girls Gone WoW, where you can get a female's perspective on the world's most popular MMO, Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice and from whom I steal so many of my cues, the Ranger Pridecast, where myself and Shane Olenko talk about the current season of the Power Rangers meta series, as well as the current season of the Super Sentai metaseries upon which it's based out of Japan. You should also check out the Starboard Power Coupling podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail. In terms of shows that aren't on VOG, you should check out the Nintendo Love Fest, which does exactly what it says on the tin, as well as X Nation, an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Mighty Mutants. You can also check out the currently on hiatus Reading is Fundamental. This is the show that Slagkick does about RuPaul's Drag Race while it's in season. Currently in the off season, which is fine enough. I also appear on that show, as does Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio and Delvin from VG Realness.
It's on hiatus because I'm fighting
Slaggy,
with you.
Where do you want to take us?
I'm just kidding. I'd like to take you to a game bar. Game Bar is the gay video game Prairie Home Companion and a part of the Hunty Bunch, which is what we call our group of podcasting friends who are part of the LGBT community. Of course, you know, VOG Network also definitely having a lot of LGBTQ representation as well. But also in the Hunty Bunch is VG Realness, serving up a weekly dose of gaming chit-chat among friends. That's video game realness. I'd also like to direct you to the Magical Boys card. Magical Boys and Cod Pieces? Is that what I was going to say? The Magical Boys podcast, which is a pop culture podcast from a queer perspective. You formerly might have known this podcast as the Joystick Jockeys. They have recently expanded to cover not just gaming. I love when, you know, we have people talking about nerdy things. So I am really excited for the boys in their new venture. And I'd like to shout out to our allies at the Nintendo Fun Club, your place for platformers, positivity, and pop punk. Man, I know that we didn't come up with these taglines for the podcast, but it's like, man, at the end of these episodes, this is just like a tongue twister here. I'd like to shout out to Anime Buoy, which is our sister ship, your port of call for anime recommendations, news bits, and discussions on a monthly basis that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. We're kind of trying to double up a bit on that since the month of June was a little bit busier in our personal lives and professional lives. So please look forward to that. I'd also like to shout out to Stabcast, which is the same type attack bonus. Your twice-monthly look at the deeper worlds of Pokemon that Spike and I do with Trainer Sulker. Also, our wonderful theme music was done by Zelda Reorchestrated, which was the project that aimed to reorchestrate beautiful Zelda music into gorgeous symphonic sound. They unfortunately closed their doors quite a while back now, but we will forever shout them out, and in remembrance of them, be pouring out a 40 into the Great Fairy Fountain. I sound more like the witch in the hut that has a... You know, making a mushroom mix is good for tricks from Link's Awakening.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I sound more like her when I do my little cackle.
All right. Well, all that having been said, it has been a true and sincere pleasure to talk to all y'all out there in Internet Radio Land this lovely Sunday afternoon. We'll be back at you in another week or two. But until then, keep gaming.
Keep gaming.
Keep thinking.
Keep thinking.
And Saikyo no Shichinin.
I'm going to have to import a Japanese dictionary from Japanese Amazon so that I can figure out what you were saying.
I've already mic checked, but speak in your mic for me.
Pretty puppies. Forever puppies.
You realize you just outed the fact that you've seen Boss Baby, right?
You're the one who put it on.
You didn't stop me.
That's because you told me to give Minions a chance.
Man, I can't believe we got through an entire episode on import gaming without talking about Dead or Alive Extreme Beach Volleyball.
Titty.